Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's mentally yours from Ellen and Yvette. Focus on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours.
Welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly podcast about all things mental health. I'm Ellen.
And I'm Yvette. And today we're chatting to Brendan and Matthew of Bottoming, the LGBTQ plus mental health podcast. We're going to be chatting about all things podcasting. So first up, guys, the name. Why?
So initially it kind of came out of, I'd written this six-part TV series, which I never did anything with. It was just to kind of get over like traumatic experiences and prod humour at them. And when I was thinking of that name, which is of the same name, Bottoming, I just wanted something that was really tongue-in-cheek and obviously referred to the community in some way and also referenced the mental health aspect. So I just thought of rock bottoming, and then we obviously have bottoming in the gay community, which is receiving the penis or whatever you have.
I think we've been friends for quite a few years at this point as well. And whenever we've talked about anything that's been even remotely difficult or traumatic, there's always been an element of humour or taking the piss out of it. So it was just, we just ran with it because we're just big fans of puns.
Yeah. And that really comes across in the podcast itself. There's a really nice sort of laid-back vibe. It sort of feels like a friendly chat and you've got humour in there, which is lovely. What made you want to set it up in the first place?
Well, initially, so me and Matthew have known each other for a few years and we've been each other's kind of, we've leaned on each other for a lot of different things, and the mental health conversation just gradually came up due to life experiences that we'd had. And we got to a point where I think I was out of work at that point. We were both, Matthew was going through therapy. I was on the waiting list for therapy and had just had a mental break, basically. And so we were looking for ways of connecting to other people based on these experiences, because at the time there wasn't really anything specifically mental health specific for LGBT people, despite there being higher cases of mental health issues within the community. And so we just decided to set it up, and initially the first few episodes were kind of based on topics, and it was kind of like a bit of an investigation for us, wasn't it? Like to look into, say, education
I guess, like, kind of, it was free therapy in a way. It was like topics that we had like negative experiences with, and I think maybe not acknowledged for years and years at that point. So, yeah, the first season, it was 5-6 episodes, but it was all just very heavy, I think, at that point for us, because it was very personal and we were kind of digging quite deep. So, yeah, that's kind of where it started.
How do you look after yourselves when you're dealing with those kind of heavy topics? Obviously, we're a mental health podcast as well, so we've kind of got our own, you know, routines and techniques, but we'd like to hear yours so we can steal them.
Yeah. I mean, we, in the first season, we started the podcast off every season, every episode saying, you know, we're not by any means professionals or experts. We're just kind of talking shit, hopefully to make ourselves and hopefully people listen and they can connect to it, feel a bit better. We took, well, we said we were going to take a short break in season one, and that was early 2019. So we kind of imagined a month or two just to kind of recuperate and then come back to it. That short break lasted over 18 months and we didn't actually come back until December 2020. And I think in that time, away from working on the podcast, we'd both gone through different journeys and different processes, whether that was kind of like counselling, medication, relationship changes, all sorts of different things. And we just came at season two and now season three with a much more open approach, I think, kind of acknowledging that obviously what we did in season one, it was too mentally draining on ourselves. And that you kind of have to make sure that you're in a good place to be able to then do this sort of work. I'm sure you feel the same with the kind of topics that you've covered in the past. So we've just kind of made sure that, say, whether it's like setting time aside and making sure that it doesn't, try not to overspill into other aspects of what you're doing, because we both do other things outside of the podcast. So
there's been a couple of occasions where we've actually had to say, or we'd had a say an interview scheduled and we've had to cancel it and rearrange it, reschedule it, because of our own mental health and just not being in the right headspace to approach it. And vice versa, we've had guests that we've been speaking to where something's happened in their lives and they're like, you know, still would like to do the episode, but we encourage them to, you know, we'll rearrange it and let's come back to it when you're in a better headspace, because we know how valuable that is. So yeah, I think that's the main thing. And then also our relationship is also a really key, it's the core of the podcast really, and I think that's also what kind of people are attracted to in a way, is that we can kind of talk about the things in very frank in a very frank way. But there is that lightheartedness, so it doesn't feel like this heavy subject, which is one of the things with mental health conversations as well, which is can be make it quite tricky to approach when there is it is just serious conversations and it is just, you know, very very dark and quite deep. And so if there's this kind of light element, it does make it easier to kind of come towards and join in the conversation as well. So that's really important for us.
What would you two say you kind of do? Because obviously I know you just asked about getting tips from us. I don't think we're the experts by any means, but you've done a lot more episodes than
hundreds
we've done. How have you managed to like stay on top of it and yourselves with that?
So for me, and I'm sure Yvette will have even better answers, but for me, it's very much about what I do immediately after the podcast and actually recording it. And recognizing it's probably not a smart idea to kind of organize like or book in work stuff or like really super social stuff right after, and just give myself the space to kind of recuperate and acknowledge like it is mentally, it can be genuinely exhausting and quite tiring to just talk about that kind of stuff, but also sometimes just being a space for listening to that. Just acknowledging that it is difficult and making sure that there's time and space afterwards. That's my main thing. Yvette, what do you do?
Yeah, I'm not always great at remembering to do, you know, decompressing or whatever what you want to call it. But I think things that sort of have helped me have been, you know, listening to music, listening to audiobooks, because when sort of we were recording this in person, I'd usually be sort of recording and then get on the train. And yeah, I realized fairly soon on that I needed to be either watching a very, you know, trashy TV type thing on my phone like a relaxing thing, or listening to an audiobook to calm me down, rather than any sort of like emails or even watching anything on TV that was a bit too dramatic or anything. But it can be hard, you know, because you can get quite involved in what people are talking about. And I really love doing meditation, which I always feel a bit of an idiot saying that, but that can be really helpful. So sometimes I just do like 10 minutes of that. I've done like 10 minutes of meditation on the train. It's quite helpful.
That's something that quite a few people we've spoken to have said actually as well. And I think I guess it depends as well what you view as meditation. Because I think a lot of people assume it's like the humbaya type approach, but actually it can be, as you say, like watching a show every time immediately after recording, or going to the playlist that you always listen to. I kind of view that entire realm of it as some form of meditation, I think, as well.
I do think also that what you guys said about when you started using it as therapy, I think that we've kind of done that as well in terms of kind of practical tips also, especially in the pandemic. I don't know if Yvette feels the same, but one thing that kept coming up when we were recording the pandemic was people recommending, and these are experts and people with lived experience in mental illness, just saying like, it's really important to have a routine, like you need to do that. And we were hearing it every single week and actually going like, wait, we don't have routines. So like, actually learning to do those things was very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Remembering the basics. So, you know, trying to remember to have a reasonably good diet and, you know, do a bit of exercise. And as Ellen says, yeah, the routine thing, that was kind of funny because it kept coming up and we kept sort of saying to each other, do you have a routine? No, do you have a routine? But actually, I've got a little doggy now who I hope you don't hear in the background, but you probably will, to be honest, at some point. And she's been fantastic for my routine because because of her, I've had to now create a routine, and that's the same every single day, including the weekends. So I think that's actually been very good for my mental health, you know, because I have to get up at the same time and I have to go outside and, you know, I have to eat at set times, and because I tend to sort of eat when the dog eats.
I was thinking about this because you've obviously been doing this since what, 2017 or something, and have you noticed a difference, or do you feel different about the podcast now to when you started in terms of what it gives you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. That's a really rubbish answer. Because in a lot of ways, it's still the fundamental, like the same idea of just realizing you're not alone in the weirdest kind of worst thoughts and things that your brain does. That's kind of stayed the same. But one thing that I do think has been different is, especially in the pandemic, we talked a lot more to a lot of experts and got really kind of practical advice led stuff, as well as the just talking about experiences. So that's definitely been different. And I think I really enjoyed doing that because, again, I don't know if this is the same for you, but I think I forgot how to do basic living and just normal stuff in lockdown. So it was good just to have people literally telling us like, you need to do this. You need to go for a walk. You need to wake up at these certain times. You need to do these really basic, obvious things that seem obvious, but you forget when you're struggling. So that's been really helpful.
Yeah, I think for me, when we started, we just felt, as Ellen said, that, you know, we just wanted to help people who had maybe first been diagnosed, just feel like they weren't alone and that there were other people living with long-term mental health conditions. But, you know, they were sort of doing well in their life still. It's been interesting, though, because over the years we've kind of managed to kind of progress from covering various conditions. So have people on chatting about different things, from schizophrenia, sort of depression, and DID, all sorts of things. But because we've been going on for a while now, we've managed to sort of branch out a bit further. So some of the episodes I've really enjoyed doing recently have been chatting about what the mental health provision is like in prisons, for example, in women's prisons. We had one episode about that, and also in men's prisons. So to look at sort of issues like that as well, I think is quite interesting, because I think when we set up the podcast, we weren't necessarily thinking about looking at that sort of stuff. It was more about sort of trying to speak to individual people who maybe were living with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia and were just feeling a bit alone about that.
I have a question for you guys to turn it back around a bit. So I feel like we're talking a lot. Not to make you guys the spokespeople for all LGBTQ people, because that's obviously very unfair, but why is it that we need to talk about mental health for LGBTQ people specifically? You mentioned earlier that the rates of depression are much higher. Why is that? Why do you think that is? And why do we need to be treating that as a specific thing with its own issues?
So yeah, I think we've, as well as obviously saying we're not experts mm-hmm. in the mental health space, one thing we've made sure that we've done from when we started, that it wasn't just me and Brendan talking about mental health. And as you say, like, we are the spokespeople for all of the LGBTQ people. And that's that. We've every episode had at least one guest and tried to make the experiences and the topics as well, like, as diverse as possible, like within the constraints that we've had so far. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's always more to do, but we've wanted to make sure as much as for an education for ourselves, I think for listeners and just to help us understand ourselves and other people a little bit more too. In terms of the difference and the kind of higher rates for LGBTQ people, there was a recent Stonewall study that said that half of LGBTIQ plus people had experienced depression and 3 in 5 experienced anxiety. Another quite alarming stat, which is really topical at the moment because of the treatment of trans people in the UK, is almost half have thought about taking their life. And I think the kind of the most simple way to put it is when you're brought up and grow up in a society where you are always a minority or a sideline, or you're never viewed as the norm, that kind of builds into your brain and your psyche and all different levels of all different things that you do, to a point where I don't think we understand mm-hmm. the impact it has on us and also what we give back as well. So it's something, obviously people can talk about this for like days and days and days, but when you've got levels of, say, discrimination, homophobia, whether that's at school, at home, internalized homophobia, alongside just like the social matters of the day, like, you know, I don't want to use the word culture war, but at the moment and the last few years especially, LGBTQ topics have been particularly fiery, and it feels like, yeah, it is really relentless. And when you're brought up and growing up, whether it's in the in the shadows of Section 28, you know, debates that, I say debates in quotations, about trans people and their existence, all of those sorts of things have a real big impact on your mental health. And I think at a much deeper level as well, I think, than a lot of people tend to either realise or want to realise. Yeah, I feel like I've gone on the houses there, but it's just, that's such a big question.
Yeah, it's a huge, trust me, yeah. I know, I don't expect you to have like, oh, easy, that was the answer, yeah. Takes that off. It's such a complex thing. And I think what you said about kind of, you've got the lifelong, you know, essentially trauma of mm-hmm. being born into a society that's still, you know, you're not treated as the norm and acceptable, mm-hmm. but then also mm-hmm. the very current, as you say, the debates constantly, mm-hmm. it's just, I can't even imagine. It sounds so draining. I honestly, living in the UK especially, I just like,
yeah.
It's awful. It's so bad.
So outside of the podcast, I work for Tonic Housing. So we've just launched the UK's first LGBT affirming retirement community. And something that I hadn't considered until I didn't work in housing, and I've never worked with older people. But one thing that kind of hit me really hard since I've been doing this job is that there was, when we announced this earlier in the year, there was a lot of social media kind of support around it, which was incredible. But obviously you always, with anything like this, you're always going to get the trolls. And a lot of the comments and statements around it were kind of, you know, why is there segregation, you know, there's already retirement communities, why do they need their own, again in quotation marks, all of this sort of kind of othering questions about it. And in that demographic especially, say 55 plus is what we the audience we target, but a lot of the people that engage with us are kind of in the 60s, 70s, 80s. They've grown up with governments that have actively criminalized their life, like their living. So some of the people that we've spoken to have still got criminal records after being arrested for being, simply for being gay. So they kind of lose all sorts of trust in any sort of, any sort of service that is supposed to be there to support and protect them, whether that's the police, the health service. You think about living through the HIV epidemic and the AIDS crisis. You get people, older LGBT people especially, that get to a certain point when they know they maybe need end-of-life care or a different living situation. And there's many, many stories of people kind of considering whether or not it's even worth going down that route or whether they should take their own life. And that's not an uncommon story, especially for older LGBT people. So I think for younger LGBT people, when that's kind of your, I guess when that's the kind of area that you have to look up to, and you see the difficulties that they faced as well as ongoing conversations. Obviously, we've made enormous progress, but as you said, it feels relentless at the moment in the UK. It kind of having, like, I guess, elders in one way or another to look up to is really important. And when they've also faced, you know, such hardship for decades and decades, it kind of, yeah, I guess in summary, it just explains why mental health in LGBTQ people is the way that it is.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't even consider it from that. I think what you're saying about what elders have experienced, I think obviously it's very insular when you're younger and you just kind of forget about that.
Yeah, 100%.
Which is awful, but it's important to be reminded of that. And I think you're right, being able to kind of look forward and go like, okay, this is what life might be like when I'm older, or this, and have that legacy. It's really tough. And there's no like easy solution, because my next question was going to be like, okay, so what do we need to do? But there's no like one thing, is there?
No, I mean, there's a lot of different things. I mean, things are going in the right direction, which is fantastic. And I think schemes like what Matthew's involved in is a part of this huge equation. I mean, fingers crossed, I mean, conversion therapy will be banned soon, which has been delayed for 2 years. But little things like that, and also representation, some little things like John Waite being on Strictly Come Dancing in a same-sex couple, which is absolutely fantastic. But little things like that are nudges to the younger community to realise that there isn't a shame or a villainisation in being who you are, and which is really important. And again, it is so simple. They are really, really simple things, small things that can have such a big impact. Just like in education now, I think it was 2020 in September, they upheaved, I'm not sure what that, if that's the right word, they changed
upheaved
the sex education. So it's now relationships and sex education to include same-sex couples. And so little things like that, I think, are definitely moving us in the right direction.
And it's important to kind of celebrate those small things, because they seem small, but they are huge, especially for the older people that you're mentioning who have been criminalized for being queer. To then see like, oh, there's someone on Strictly who's opened the gate. It's huge.
Yeah.
Or Bake Off.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, that's a really interesting episode, because he was talking about how running helps his mental health and helps his anxiety, which can be a bit of a kind of controversial one, just because, you know, if a doctor tells you to go for a run, that can be, you know, well, piss you off a little bit. But it was really interesting to hear, you know, the positive effect that exercise had had on his mental health and his anxiety. And yeah, I thought it was really inspiring, actually.
Yeah, he's just completed the marathon this weekend as well, which is incredible. So that's 4 years after his doctor had that conversation with him. And it did almost make me want to start running, but still I'm just like, I'm not in a good place with running at the minute. We're not mates, so.
I think that the main kind of lesson in that is just, it's about finding what works for you rather than, you know, directing people to go and run necessarily. It's more about finding something that, you know, kind of gives you what you need from it. And it doesn't necessarily, that's not to say it's going to be easy mm-hmm. at the start or even during it. But if you find something that clicks, obviously that's the important bit, isn't it?
It's life-saving.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of your excellent guests, which leads me on to seamlessly onto my next question. Tell us more about some of your favourite guests.
Ooh. So I have a favourite episode, I think, which is a tough episode to listen back to, and I haven't done it since it came out. I think it was maybe episode 8 or something of season 2, but it's called The Therapist's Chair, and we basically tried to look at the different routes to therapy in the UK. So we spoken to an assistant psychologist from the NHS, someone who works at Mind Out charity in Brighton, and a private private psychotherapist. And we also shared our personal experiences of therapy and why we needed to get therapy in the first place. And I think for me, I love that so much because of the practical element to it, where someone could come to the episode and take a couple of tools from it, which they might not necessarily get from every episode that we do, because sometimes it's just story-based or whatever. But with this particular episode, there was like, okay, this is kind of broadly what it's like in the NHS charity and private. So I think I'm most proud of that episode. How about you?
I'm going to cheat a little bit and probably say it's like multiple episodes. Oh. So I really loved being able to, because we were running kind of from December. We only stopped season 2 in August, but it meant that we were able to cover LGBT History Month and Pride Month in June as well. Usually we run every other week with releases, but for those 2 months we release weekly episodes. And the History Month series back in February, that was quite, I think that was a turning point for maybe the podcast and what we wanted to do with it, mm-hmm. because it did go from, you know, topic based to more, I guess, like a little bit of a deeper analysis of stuff maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think also that was kind of maybe when our interview skills shifted a little bit, like that's not our background. We just picked up some mics a couple of years ago. but as well in Pride Month, given a lot of the conversation around either Pride's not being able to happen during the pandemic, and then also kind of like the stories about Pride in London and the controversies kind of backstage with racism and transphobia and homophobia and all those different things, we wanted to showcase small prides. So at the end of every episode for Pride Month, we spoke to a specific pride that was going on. So we spoke to Trans Pride, we spoke to Middlesex Pride,
UK Black Pride,
and that was just
and
really
Traveller
nice.
Pride
and
well.
Traveller Pride. So it was just really nice to kind of, from this room that we're recording in right now, speak to and experience so many things mm-hmm. that made me feel, I don't know what the right word is, somewhat, but being able to do those two things kind of made me feel just incredibly grateful mm-hmm. to like be who I am and be like a part of such an amazing, amazing community of people.
And what are you looking forward to covering next? And do you have any dream guests?
Oh, that's a good
you
question.
You can manifest it here.
Season 3, kind of, we're moving into more profile-based, mm-hmm. Kind of guess how you started, because we've obviously realised there's so much to condense. If you're looking at, say, one topic mm-hmm. as, say, like anxiety or whatever, or just education or religion, and to pick that one thing from someone's life and say, can we talk about this, when there's so many other things that have happened to them in their lives that have also affected their mental health. So we're moving towards more profile-based interviews for season 3. Michael was an incredible one. We're really excited about that. Do you want to say your dream guest?
My dream guest, and I think I'm turning into a bit of a stalker at this point. I want to get Muna on.
Oh yes.
I am obsessed with them yeah. and have been since their first EP. So I am like, yeah, probably getting a little bit too much on like the want to get them. I probably just need to relax and, like, as you say, manifest and hopefully it'll happen.
Let them come to you.
Yeah. But I think also I So my, just really, really quickly, my experience with therapy was through the charity Survivors UK, who I know that was mentioned on one of your previous episodes by a guest. I would really like to speak to them. I spent 2 years going through counselling with them a couple of years ago. And those two courses of therapy like changed my life, especially because of the work that they do and the things they cover. So that's a topic I think up until this point, I've definitely shied away from covering because I think it's, I know it's going to be a heavy one, but I haven't felt ready to do it. Whereas I think I've just started counselling again last week, actually, but with a different organisation. And I think, yeah, I think I'd really like to speak to Survivors UK, but also, I mean, there's so many other organisations that we've kind of loosely engaged with so far that we want to speak to and showcase because, yeah, as I say, there's just so many amazing people that are like working in underfunded, volunteer, really difficult things that I don't think people are aware of. So, yeah.
Them and also Mona. Easy.
Them and also Mona, yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's nice great.
Yeah.
I would very love to listen to all of those. I think it's a nice breadth of things.
Just before we wrap up, though, where can listeners hear Bottoming and follow you on social media? Let's not forget.
Mm-hmm. So we are on Instagram, Twitter, recently TikTok, at Bottoming Pod. So it's easier to say on all of them. But you can just go to bottomingpodcast.com. And we've got all of our, we've got an archive of episodes. We put up links and resources after every episode on there as well. And then, yeah, links to all of our socials. We want to start a Twitch channel, possibly, because we're both both gaming at the minute. But we'll see how that goes.
So this is goodbye from Mentally Yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores from Mentally Yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed today, you can give the Samaritans a ring on 116 123.
If you like Mentally Yours, you can also find us on Twitter. We're at MentallyYRS. We also have a lovely Facebook group, which is just called Mentally Yours.
And if you really liked us, you could do us a massive favour and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It's much appreciated, helps us, you know, continue doing what we're doing. So please do rate and review and check back in next week for more Mentally Yours.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro!
All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.